The 37th ruler of Ithacana lay on his back, staring up at the soot stains on the roof of the barracks. His helmet rested next to his left hand, and as he turned his head to regard the monstrous steel thing he'd inherited along with his title, he decided that whichever one of his ancestors had come up with the idea of the helmets had been both a genius and a sadist. Genius, because the things put fear in the hearts of Ithacana's enemies. Sadist, because wearing it was like having his head stuffed in a cooking pot that smelled of sweaty socks. His twin sister's face appeared in his line of sight, her expression amused. Nana has examined her, says she's shockingly fit, most certainly healthy, and, barring tragedy, likely to have a goodly long while. Arin blinked once. Disappointed? Anna asked. Rolling onto one elbow, Arin sat upright. Contrary to the opinions of our neighboring kingdoms, I'm not actually so depraved as to wish death upon an innocent girl. Are you so sure she's innocent? Are you arguing that she's not? Anna scrunched up her face, then shook her head. In true Maradrinian fashion, they've given you a beautiful and sheltered shrinking violet. Good to look at and not much else. Remembering how the young woman had shaken as she'd walked up the pier, holding tightly to her father's arm, her enormous blue eyes filled with terror, Arin was inclined to agree with his sister's assessment. Yet even so, he fully intended to keep Lara isolated until he could get a grasp on her true nature, and learn exactly where her loyalties lay. Have our spies learned anything more about her? Anna shook her head. Nothing? He appears to have kept her hidden away in the desert, and until she rode out of the red sands, not even the Maradrinians knew her name. Why all the secrecy? They say it was for her protection. Not everyone is pleased about our alliance with Maradrina. Valkata most of all. Arin frowned, dissatisfied with the answer, though he could not say why. Maradrina and Valkata were continually at war over the fertile stretch of land running down the western coast of the southern continent, the border contested by both kingdoms. It was possible the Valkatan Empress might have attempted to disrupt the alliance by assassinating the princess, but he thought it unlikely. For one, Silas Veliant had more daughters than he knew what to do with, and the treaty had not been specific about which girl would be sent. Two, every kingdom north and south knew that Arin's marriage to a Maradrinian princess was nothing more than a symbolic act. All parties involved more interested in the trade terms underpinning the agreement and the peace they purchased. The treaty would have endured even if the princess had not. But third, and what troubled him most of all, was that it wasn't Maradrinian nature to hide from anyone. If anything, Silas would have relished the assassination of a daughter or two because it would renew the flagging support of his people for the war against Valkata. She awake yet?
No. I came down as soon as Nana deemed her a fit and healthy wife for you, because I wanted to be the one to share the wonderful news.
Arin shot her a warning look. Lara is your queen now. Perhaps try showing her a little respect? Anna responded by showing him her middle finger.
What are you going to do with Queen Lara?
With tits like that, I'd suggest bedding her.
Arin turned to glare at Jor, the captain of his honor guard who sat on the far side of the fire pit.
Thank you for the suggestion. What were they thinking, dressing her in silk in the pouring rain? Might as well have paraded her naked in front of us all.
Arin had, in fact, noticed. Even bedraggled by the rain, she'd been stunning, her form curved, her exquisite face framed by hair the color of honey. Not that he'd expected anything else. Despite being past his prime, the king of Maradrina remained a vital man, and it was known he chose the majority of his wives for beauty and nothing else. The thought of the other king made Arin's stomach sour. He recalled the smug expression on the other man's face as he handed his precious daughter over. It was an expression the Rat King was entitled to. While Ithacana was now bound to new and undesirable trade terms, all the king of Maradrina had given up was one of his innumerable children and a promise to continue the peace that had stood between the two kingdoms for the past 15 years. And not for the first time, Arryn cursed his parents for making his marriage to Maradrina part of the agreement. "A piece of paper with 3 signatures will do little to unite our kingdoms," his mother had always replied when he complained. "Your marriage will be the first step toward creating a true alliance between peoples. You will lead by example, and in doing so, you will ensure Ithacana does more than just survive by the skin of its teeth. And if that means nothing to you, then remember that your father gave his word on my behalf." And an Ithacanian always kept his word. Which was why, on the 15th anniversary of the agreement, despite his parents being a year dead, Arryn had sent word to Maradrina to bring their princess to be wed. "Can't argue that she's easy on the eyes. I can only hope I'll be so lucky." Though Anna's voice was light, Arryn didn't miss how her hazel eyes turned dull at the mention of her half of the bargain. The king of Harrendel, their neighbor to the north, had yet to send for his son's Ithacanian bride, but with Arryn now wed to Laura, it was only a matter of time. Harrendel would know by now the terms Maradrina had negotiated, and they'd be keen to extract their own pound of flesh. Both deals would incite retaliation from Amarid, the other northern kingdom's relationship with Ithacana, already fraught with conflict, given that their merchant ships competed for business with the bridge. Giving Jor a meaningful look, Arryn waited until his honor guard made themselves scarce before turning to his sister.
"I won't make you marry the prince if you don't wish to. I'll compensate them some other way. Harrendel is more pragmatic than Maradrina. They can be bought."
Because it was one thing for Arryn to take a girl he hadn't chosen and never met as a bride for the sake of peace, quite another to give his sister to a foreign king where she'd be alone in a strange place to be used however they willed.
"Don't be an idiot, Arryn. You know I'll put the good of our kingdom first."
Anna leaned against his left shoulder, where she'd stood with him and fought for him all of their lives.
"And you didn't answer my question."
That was because he didn't know what he was going to do with Laura.
"We can't let our guard down," Anna said. "Silas might have promised peace, but don't for a second believe he intends to honor that for the sake of her. The bastard would probably sacrifice 12 daughters if it saw us lowering our defenses."
"I'm aware."
"She might be beautiful," his sister continued, "but never believe for a heartbeat that isn't by design. She's the daughter of our enemy. He wants you to be distracted by her. She's probably been instructed to seduce you, to find out what she can about Ithacana's secrets on the hope she'll be able to pass them back to her father. We don't need him holding that kind of bargaining chip."
"How exactly would she manage that? It isn't as though we'll be sending her home for visits. She'll have no contact with anyone outside of Ithacana. He has to know that."
"Better to be safe. Better that she be kept in the dark."
"So I should keep her locked up in our parents' home on this empty island for the rest of her days?" Arryn stared at the glowing embers of the fire. A gust of wind drove rain into the hole in the roof above, the droplets hissing as they struck the charred wood. "And if..." He swallowed hard, knowing he had obligations to his kingdom. "When we have a child, should I keep him or her locked up here as well?"
"I never said it would be easy."
His sister took his hand, twisting it upright to regard the cut across his palm, bleeding where he'd picked at the scab.
"But our duty is to protect our people, to keep Arryn-Al a secret, to keep it safe."
"I know, but that didn't mean he didn't feel an obligation to the young woman he'd married, whom he'd brought through the dark stretches of the bridge, knowing that when she woke, it would be in a place entirely different than any she'd known. Two, not the life she'd chosen, but one that had been forced upon her.
"You should go up to the house," Anna said. "The sedative will wear off soon enough."
"You go." Arryn lay back down on the bench, listening to the thunder rolling over the island. The storm nearly passed, though it would soon be replaced by another. She's been through enough without waking up in a room with a strange man.
Anna looked for a moment like she might argue, then nodded. I'll send word when she wakes.
Rising, she left the barracks on silent feet, leaving him alone. You're a coward, he thought to himself, because it had only been an excuse to avoid seeing the girl. His mother had believed that this princess was the key to achieving greatness for Ithacana, but Arryn wasn't convinced. Ithacana needed a queen who was a warrior, a woman who'd fight to the death for her people, a woman who was cunning and ruthless, not because she wanted to be, but because her country needed her to be. A woman who'd challenge him every day for the rest of his life. A woman Ithacana would respect. And there was one thing he was certain. Laura Veliant was not that woman.
Laura woke with a start, her head aching and her mouth tasting sour. Without moving, she opened her eyes, taking in what she could of the bedroom. An open window, through which poured a humid breeze, filled with the scents of flowers and lush greenery she possessed no names for, having spent her life surrounded by sand. The view was of a verdant garden, the light flat and silvery, as though it were filtered through thick clouds. The only sound was the faint pitter-patter of rain, and that of a female humming. She relaxed the hand that had instantly balled into a fist, primed to attack, and slowly turned her head. An extraordinarily striking woman, perhaps 5 years older than Laura, with long, curling dark hair, stood in the center of the room wearing one of Laura's dresses. One of Mary Lynn's dresses, she realized with a pang. From the way she'd cocked her head, Laura knew the other woman had heard her move, but she carried on as though she had not, swishing the two short silken skirts from side to side, continuing with her humming. Laura said nothing, taking in the curved fruitwood furniture that was polished to a shine, and vases of brilliant flowers set on nearly every flat surface. The floors were made of tiny pieces of wood laid out in elaborate designs, the walls plastered white and decorated with vibrant artwork. There was a door leading to what appeared to be a bathing chamber, and another, shut, which she assumed led to a hallway beyond. Satisfied that she had the lay of her surroundings, Laura asked, "Where am I?" "Oh, you're awake. You're in the king's home on Midwatch Island." "I see." If Midwatch was, as the name suggested, in the middle of Ithacana, she'd been unconscious for longer than she'd realized. They'd drugged her, which meant they did not trust her. No surprise there. "How did I get here?" "You arrived at Midwatch by sea." "How long was I asleep?" "You weren't precisely asleep, just not present." The woman gave her an apologetic shrug. "Forgive us. It's in every Ithacanian's nature to be secretive, and we are still coming to terms with having an outsider in our midst." "So it would seem." Laura noticed that the woman hadn't answered her question, though she knew exactly what they'd dosed her with and why. Keeping a person unconscious for days had consequences, often of the fatal variety. Drugging her to wipe her memory was safer, but fallible, especially when the individual being dosed had been exposed in the past. Already, shadows of memory were creeping around the edges of Laura's thoughts, memories of walking in ill-fitting footwear on a hard surface. She'd been in the bridge, and at some point along its length, they'd brought her out. Refocusing her gaze on the woman, she asked, "Why are you wearing my dress?" "You have a whole chest of them. I was hanging them up for you. And I thought I'd try one on to see if I liked it." Laura cocked an eyebrow. "And do you?" "Oh, yes." The stranger arched her back, smiling at her reflection in the mirror. "Entirely impractical, but appealing, nonetheless. I could use one or two in my own closet." Reaching up one hand, she pushed the dress's straps off her shoulders, allowing it to slide down her body and pool on the floor at her feet. She wore not a scrap underneath, her body all curved muscle, her breasts small and pert. "Gorgeous gown you wore for your wedding, by the way." She pulled a short-sleeved tunic over her head, then tugged a pair of snug trousers on beneath. There were a set of greaves sitting on the floor, and she buckled those on as though she'd done so 1,000 times. "I'd ask to borrow it for my own part in the 15-year treaty, but I'm afraid it took a bit of wear on your journey." Lara blinked, realization dawning on her. "You're the Ithaconian princess." "Among other things," the woman grinned. "But I don't want to give away all our secrets. My brother would never forgive me." "Your brother?" "Your husband." Picking up a bow and quiver, the woman, the princess, strode across the floor. "I'm Anna." She bent down to kiss Lara's cheek. "And I, for one, am looking forward to getting to know you, sister." There was a knock at the door, and a servant carrying a platter of sliced fruits entered, setting the food on a table before announcing that dinner would be at the 7th hour. "I'll leave you alone," Anna said. "Give you a chance to get yourself settled. I'm sure waking up here was quite the shock." After years of Saren's aggressive tutelage, it would take a great deal more than waking in a featherbed to shock Lara. But she allowed a faint tremor into her voice as she said, "The king, is he? Will he?" Anna shrugged. "Auryn is not horribly predictable in his comings and goings, I'm afraid. Better that you make yourself comfortable rather than wait for him to come home. Have a bath, eat some fruit, have a drink, or 10. A flash of disappointment surged through Lara, but she gave Anna a smile before shutting the door and flipping the latch. She stared at the bit of metal for a long moment, surprised the Ithaconians would allow her privacy. Then she set aside the thought. Everything she knew about them was more speculation than fact. Better to approach her circumstances as though she knew nothing at all. After donning the gown Anna had discarded and belting on her knives, which she was surprised to find sitting on top of her trunk, Lara circled the room looking for signs she was being spied on, but there were no holes in the walls or the ceiling, no cracks in the floorboards. Picking up her tray of fruit, she wandered into what she'd presumed to be the bathing chamber, only to discover it devoid of anything resembling a bath, despite the wooden shelves laden with soft towels, scrubs, soaps, and a whole collection of brushes and combs. However, there was another door. Lara pushed the solid slab of wood open, revealing a sloped courtyard, resplendent with a lushness she had never seen before. The walls of the building were concealed by climbing vines laden with brilliant flowers of pink and purple and orange, and 2 trees, with enormous split leaves, climbed toward the sky, several colorful birds sitting in their branches. A pathway made of square-cut stones, framed by tiny white rocks, meandered through the courtyard. But what took her breath away was the stream flowing through the center of everything. The building, she realized, had been constructed almost like a bridge over top of a small waterfall. The water cascaded over slabs of rock into a pool beneath, which flowed through a channel to another pool, and then yet another, before running under the far side of the home to whatever lay beyond. Stepping into the courtyard, Lara walked down the narrow path to the pool at the base of the waterfall, noting the curved stone benches beneath the water, indicating that this was where one was intended to bathe. Steam rose faintly from its surface, and a quick dip of her toe turned her skin pink with heat. There was only one other entrance to the courtyard, and that was a door opposite to the one leading to her rooms. Crossing the stream using a small footbridge, Lara walked up to the door and silently tested the handle. Locked. The rooms beyond also had a window that mirrored hers, but it was closed and curtained. Tilting her head skyward revealed nothing but swirling clouds, and a quick test of the vines on the walls revealed them strong enough to bear her weight should she choose to climb out. Countless ways to escape. which meant this home was not intended to be a prison. A voice caught her attention.
She's awake, then.
The king. About a half hour ago.
And?
Laura hurried down the path next to the spring, dropping to her knees where the water flowed under the building. She was calmer than I anticipated. Mostly she wanted to know why I was wearing one of her dresses. I suppose we all have our priorities.
Why were you wearing one of her dresses?
Because they were pretty and I was bored. Laura crawled forward a few feet under the building until she could see their legs. He had a bow held loosely in one hand, which he swung back and forth. She wanted to go further, to attempt to see his face, but she couldn't risk being heard.
She say anything of note?
I've had more exciting conversations with your cat. Your dinners together are destined to be lively affairs.
Shocking.
The king kicked a rock, sending it bouncing into the stream, splashing Laura in the face.
Most precious daughter, my ass. I bet he has boots that are more precious to him than that girl.
I'll take that bet, you self-righteous bastard, Laura thought. He added,
These concessions weren't what I wanted out of this treaty, Anna. I don't like them, and I don't want to sign the order.
You have to. Moradrina fulfilled their end of the deal. If we break faith, there will be consequences, the loss of peace being the first of them. They both started walking. Then there was a scrape of boots, the measured thuds of two people walking upstairs. And Anna's voice was faint as she said,
Giving the Moradrinian king what he wants will make him depend on us all the more. It might pay off.
And just barely, Laura heard his response.
Moradrina will starve before it ever sees the benefit of this treaty.
The embers of Laura's fury burned hot on the heels of his words, memories of the gaunt children she'd seen on the streets of her kingdom filling her eyes. Straightening, she stormed up the path to her room, intent on finding that asshole of a king and plunging one of her knives into his wicked, Ithacanian guts. But that would accomplish nothing. Stopping on the path, she stared up at the sky and took a series of breaths, finding calm in the sea of fire that was her soul. As delightful as gutting her husband would be, it wouldn't solve Moradrina's problems. Otherwise, her father would have sent an assassin a long time ago to do that very deed. It was not a matter of bringing down a man, but bringing down a kingdom. And to do that, she needed to play the long game, to delay her strike for when it would be most effective. To remember what she'd been trained for and why. To be the woman that her father had created to save their homeland. A door slammed behind her, and Laura whirled around, expecting one of the servant women had come to offer her services. She could not have been more mistaken. The man was naked, save for the towel wrapped around his waist that kept him from being exposed to her entirely. But what she could see was more than enough. Tall and broad-shouldered, his muscled body was as defined as if it were carved from stone. His arms marked with old scars that were white against tanned flesh. And his face. Dark hair framed high cheekbones and a strong jaw, which were tempered by full lips. His eyes roved over her, making color rise to her cheeks.
Of course, of all the rooms she could have put you in, she chose that one. He said,
and the familiarity of his voice was like a pail of icy water being dumped over her head as she realized who was standing before her. All she saw now was that wicked mask, and all she heard was,
Moradrina will starve.
Laura's hands twitched to the knives at her waist, but she covered the motion by adjusting the waist of her dress. He wasn't fooled.
Do you even know how to use those?
The thought that she could kill this arrogant, condescending man where he stood danced through her head, but Laura only gave him a sweet smile. I've cut my fair share of meat. His eyes brightened with interest.
So, the little princess has a backbone after all.
Gesturing to her knives, he said,
I meant, do you know how to fight with them?
To say no meant she could never be caught using them in any capacity without outing herself as a liar. So instead, Laura cocked one bemused eyebrow. I was raised to be your queen, not a common soldier. The interest in his eyes flickered out. Which would not do. She was supposed to seduce him, and in doing so, make him trust her. But for that to happen, he had to want her. The misting rain had made the silk of her dress damp, and she could feel it clinging to her breasts. She'd been trained for this, had sat through countless lessons where she'd been taught precisely what she needed to do to catch a man's interest, and to keep it. Arching her back, she said, "Are you here to claim what is your due?" His expression didn't shift. If anything, he appeared bored with her.
"The only thing I'm due for is a bath before dinner. Dragging your ass back from Southwash was sweaty business. You're heavier than you look."
Laura's cheeks flamed.
"That said, if you are inclined to do the same, you are welcome to go first. Given you haven't seen a wash in 3 days, you probably need it more than I do."
She stared at him, at a loss for words.
"But if you're only out here to admire the foliage, perhaps you might grant me a modicum of privacy."
He gave her a lazy smile.
"Or not. I'm not shy."
That was what he expected. For her to be a dutiful little Maradrinian wife and attend to his needs, whether she wanted to or not. It was what he expected, she thought, watching him watch her. But it wasn't what he wanted. Thoughts flicked through her mind, one after another. Of the clothes he wore, the colors intended to blend into a jungle around them. The scars, which had clearly come from battle. The bow he'd held in his hand, ready to use at a heartbeat's notice. This man is a hunter, she decided. And what he wants is a chase. She was more than happy to give him one, especially if it meant delaying a certain inevitability that she was desperate to avoid. "Then you can wait." She smiled inwardly at the surprise that lit up his eyes. Unbuckling her belt, she dropped the weapons next to the edge of the pool, then turned her back on the king, pushing the straps of her dress off as she did. Peeling the damp silk from her body, Laura kicked the garment aside, feeling his eyes on her as she stepped into the pool, with only her hair hanging to the small of her back to conceal her naked flesh. It was scorching hot, a temperature that one needed to ease into slowly. But Laura gritted her teeth and waded down the steps, only turning when the swirling water covered her breasts. The king stared at her. She gave him a serene smile. "I'll let you know when I'm finished." He opened his mouth as though to argue, then shook his head once and turned. Laura allowed him to take 3 steps before calling out, "Your Majesty." The king of Ithacana turned to regard her, not quite hiding the anticipation in his expression. Laura let her head fall back so that the waterfall poured over her hair. "Please leave me the soap. I am afraid I forgot to bring any out with me." She hesitated, then added, "The towel, too." The bar landed in the water next to her with a splash. Laura opened her eyes in time to watch him remove the towel from his waist and toss it on a rock, his feet smacking against the path as he strode naked back to his room. Biting the insides of her cheeks, Laura struggled to contain her grin. This man might be a hunter, but he was mistaken if he believed she was prey. Laura stayed in the hot springs until her skin was pink and wrinkled, half to annoy the king of Ithacana, and half because the sensation of being wholly immersed in warm water was an unfamiliar delight. In the oasis, bathing had been limited to a basin, a cloth, and lots of vigorous scrubbing. Back in her rooms, she took care with her appearance, selecting a sky-blue gown that left her arms and most of her cleavage bare, braiding her wet hair into a coronet that revealed her neck and shoulders. In her trunk was a chest of cosmetics, the false bottom concealing tiny jars of poisons and drugs, from which she tucked a vial into her cleverly designed bracelet. She darkened her lashes and swept gold dust across her skin, staining her lips a rosy pink, right as the clock on the desk struck the seventh hour. Then, taking a deep breath, she stepped out into the hallway and followed the smell of food. The polished floor of the hall reflected the light from beautiful sconces made of Valcotton glass. The walls covered with latticework of thin pieces of amber-colored wood, on which several bright paintings framed with bronze were hung. The end of the hallway led to what was clearly a kitchen, so she took the door leading left and found herself in a foyer tiled with marble. A heavy exterior door framed with windows revealing nothing in the growing darkness. Laura. Turning her head at the sound of her name, she looked through the open doors into a large dining room, which was dominated by a beautiful table made of wood inset with squares of enamel, around which a dozen chairs were placed. Anna sat with her chair pushed back and a glass balanced on one trousered knee. How was your bath? The amusement in Anna's eyes suggested she was not unaware of Laura's conversation with her brother. Delightful, thank— Sitting on a chair across from the princess was the largest cat she'd ever seen, at least the size of a dog. Regarding her with golden eyes, it lifted one paw and licked it, proceeding to groom itself at the dinner table. Good God, what is that? That's Vitex. He's Auron's pet. Pet? The other woman shrugged. Auron found him abandoned when he was just a kitten, took him into the house, and then couldn't get the damned creature to leave. He does keep the snakes out, I'll give him that. Laura watched the animal warily. It was big enough to take down a human if it got the jump. Is he friendly? Sometimes. Best to let him come to you, though. Now shoo, Vitex. Shoo! The enormous creature gave her a look of disdain, then hopped off the chair and disappeared from the room. Laura sat down across from the princess, taking in the full wall of windows, which she expected showcased an impressive view in the light of day. Where is everyone? Anna took a long mouthful of wine, then picked up the bottle on the center of the table and filled Laura's glass and her own, the act making Laura blink. In Moradrina, only servants handled a bottle. One did not pour for oneself. She rather thought that her countrymen might perish from thirst before ever breaking with the custom. This is my parents'— my brother's private residence. So there isn't anyone here right now but us three, plus the cook and two servants. And I'll be gone tomorrow once my hangover wears off. She lifted her glass. Cheers. Laura dutifully lifted her own and took a swallow, noting the stemware was also from Valcotta, the wine from Amarid, and unless she missed her mark, the silverware from her homeland. She catalogued the details away for later consideration. Ithacana made the market for most goods, buying at Northwatch, transporting the products through their bridge, then selling them at a premium at Southwatch, only to reverse the process with the Southern Kingdom's exports. Merchants who traveled the length of the bridge paid stiff tolls for the privilege, and they were always kept under guard by Ithacanian soldiers. Ithacana itself exported nothing, but it appeared they had no compunctions against importing products from other places. Is the entirety of this island the king's private domain, then? Laura asked, wondering when or if the man in question would make an appearance. No. My father built this home for my mother so that she would be comfortable during the times of the year they were here. Where were they the rest of the time? Anna smiled. Elsewhere. Secrets. Are there others living on this island whom I should be aware of? Auron's honor guard is here. You'll meet them at some point, I imagine. Frustration bit at Laura, and she took another sip of wine to soothe the sensation away. She'd only been here a matter of hours. No one, not even Saren and her father, could expect her to find a way through Ithacana's defenses in the space of a day. I look forward to meeting them, I'm sure. I doubt that. They're a little rough around the edges compared to what you're used to, I expect, though you are something of a mystery. The princess was doing her own digging. Laura smiled.
What of you? You say that you will be leaving tomorrow. Is this island not your home?
I'm the commander at Southwatch.
Laura choked on her mouthful of wine.
But you're a...
woman,
Anna supplied.
You'll find we hold to a different way of life in Ithacana. What's between your legs doesn't determine the path you'll walk in life. Half the garrison at Southwatch is made up of women.
How liberating.
Laura envisioned the horror on her father's face should he discover the island he'd failed time and again to beat in battle was defended by women.
It can be for you, too, should you want it to be.
Don't make promises we can't keep, Anna.
The king of Ithacana strode into the dining room, his dark hair damp from bathing. Though she noted his face was still rough with stubble, it gave him a roguish appeal. But she stamped the thought down the moment it rose.
What's wrong with her learning how to wield a weapon? Ithacana's dangerous. It would be for her own safety.
He eyed the table, then sat at the end of it.
It's not her safety that I'm concerned about.
Laura shot him a look of disdain.
You'd fit in well in Maridrina, your grace, if the thought of your wife knowing how to wield a knife put such fear in your heart.
Oh my.
Anna filled her glass up to the brim and leaned back in her chair.
I misjudged your wit, Laura.
You're wasting your breath, Anna. Laura believes weapons are the domain of common soldiers, and not worthy of her time.
I said no such thing. I said I was trained to be a wife and queen, not a common soldier.
And just what did that training entail?
Perhaps fate will favor you, and one day you'll find out, Your Majesty.
Although as it stands, you'll need to content yourself with my flawless needlework.
Howling with laughter, Anna poured herself yet another glass of wine, and then filled up one for her brother.
This might help.
Arryn disregarded them both in favor of the servants who appeared, bearing trays of food, which they set down on the table, disappearing only to return again with more. There were fresh fruits and vegetables, all brilliantly colored, as well as large fish still in possession of their heads. One fish sat on a bed of steaming rice, which Laura eyed and then dismissed, her attention snapping to the herb-crusted roast beef, the question of its origin tamping down her anger at the excess of food. Food that could have gone to Maridrina. She waited for one of the servants to serve her, but they all departed. Then the royal siblings began helping themselves, loading their plates with salad and fish and beef, all at the same time with no regard to the order of things.
This is more diverse fare than I'm used to, she said. I've never had fish before, although I suppose it's a staple here.
Arryn lifted his head, eyeing the offerings. And Laura saw the corner of his eye tick.
There are some islands with wild boar, goat, chicken. Snake is often on the menu. Everything else is an import, usually from Herondale via the market at Northwatch.
Saren's spies reported that not all the goods that entered the bridge at Northwatch exited at Southwatch, indicating that the Ithacanians used the structure to transport products within their own kingdom.
There are ways in and out of the bridge beyond the openings at Northwatch and Southwatch,
Saren had shouted continually at Laura and her sisters.
Those are the weak points. Find your way in.
Taking healthy servings of everything, Laura cut into her slice of beef, watching the juices pool beneath. Then she took a bite. Smiling at one of the servants who'd reappeared with more wine, she said,
This is delicious.
None of them spoke for a long time. And for her part, Laura's silence was a result of her mouth being full of food.
It was better than anything she'd ever had,
fresh and seasoned with spices she couldn't even name.
This is what possessing the bridge meant, she thought,
imagining all this food arriving at Maridrina.
Why did your father keep you in the middle of the Red Desert?
Arryn finally asked.
For our safety.
Our?
Give the truth when you can, Saren's voice instructed from her thoughts.
She swallowed a bit of fish that was drenched with a citrus butter. Mine and my sister's. Well, half-sister's. Both siblings stopped chewing.
How many children is he hiding out there?
12, including myself.
Laura took a sip of wine, then refilled her plate.
My father selected from amongst us the girl he believed would be most fitting as your queen.
Auron was staring at her with a blank expression, while his twin nodded sagely before asking,
"The most beautiful, you mean?"
"No, I'm afraid not."
"The most intelligent?"
Laura shook her head, thinking of how swiftly Sarhina and Marilyn could crack codes
and build them.
"Why you, then?"
It wasn't my place to question the reasons behind his decision.
"Surely you have an opinion on the matter."
"Certainly. That my opinion doesn't matter."
"What if I asked you for it?"
He frowned.
"I am asking for it."
"My father is the longest ruling monarch in Mauradrina's history. His wisdom and understanding of the relationship between our two kingdoms is what guided him to choose me to be your wife."
Anna abruptly jerked toward her brother.
"Auron, we've been infiltrated. There's a spy amongst us."
Laura felt her stomach drop, even as Auron's eyes turned on her. Her fingers twitched toward the knives at her waist, ready to fight her way out if she needed to.
"There's no other explanation for it. How else could that deceitful prick of a king have known which daughter would make the absolute worst wife for you?"
Snorting, Auron shook his head even as Laura hid her relief behind another mouthful of fish, which now had the same appeal as swallowing sawdust.
"No wonder he looked so damn smug at the wedding," the princess continued.
"He probably figured you'd send her back after a week."
"Anna?" "It's amazing, really. It's almost as though she were created to drive you into an early grave."
"More accurate than you know," Laura thought.
"Anna, if you don't shut your mouth, I'm going to drown you in your wine."
Anna held up her glass in a toast.
"You're welcome to try, brother dearest."
Laura chose that moment to interrupt, while at the same time refilling both the siblings' glasses. Pouring the wine herself made it an easy thing to deposit several drops from the tiny vial hidden in her hand into each, ensuring they'd both sleep heavily tonight.
"Speaking of my father, will you allow me to correspond with him?"
They stared at her, their displeasure at her request clear as they both drained their glasses, seemingly unaware of how they mirrored each other. Laura smiled internally, knowing the narcotic mixed with the alcohol would do its duty well.
"Why would you want to? And please don't tell me it's to sustain what is so obviously not a close father-daughter relationship."
A dozen nasty retorts formed in her mind, and Laura bit down on every last one of them. She did need the cursed man to fall for her. "It has been made clear to me that to protect the interests of Ithacana, I will never be allowed to see my family, my home, or even my people again. That this house, as lovely as it may be, is to be my prison for as long as you see fit. Pen and paper are all I have left to maintain my connection with all that I have left behind. That is, if you allow it." He looked away, his jaw working as though he were waging some great internal debate. Then his eyes flicked to his sisters, the woman giving him the very faintest shake of her head, which was interesting. Anna portrayed herself as the light-hearted and compassionate of the pair, but perhaps that was not an accurate assessment of her character. Yet whatever warning had passed between brother and sister, Auron chose to ignore it.
"You are welcome to correspond with your father, but your letters will be read, and if they contain information that jeopardizes Ithacana, you will be asked to remove it. If you're caught using a code, your privileges will be revoked."
What he might ask her to remove would reveal a great deal, a concept that was not lost on the commander of Southwatch. Anna's eyes flashed with irritation, and she opened her mouth before shutting it again, unwilling to compromise her performance. Though Laura had no doubt she'd argue against the correspondence once Laura was out of earshot.
"I don't care for having my private letters read," Laura argued, only because he'd expect it.
"And I don't overly care to read them. But we must all do things we don't care to do, so I suggest you get used to it."
And without another word, he shoved back his chair and exited the room with a slight sway to his step. Anna let loose a world-weary sigh.
Pulling the cork from another bottle of wine, she filled Laura's glass to the brim. At Southwatch, this is what we call an Anna pour. Despite knowing that the woman's behavior was an act to earn her trust, Laura smiled, taking a mouthful of the liquid. Is he always this quick to temper? She asked, even as she thought. Is he always this much of a prick? The smile on the other woman's face fell away. No. There was a slight slur to her voice, and she frowned at her glass. God, how much of this did I drink? Amarid makes the finest wines in the world, hard not to indulge. Moments later, Anna's chin hit the table with a heavy thud. One of the servants entered at that precise moment, his jaw dropping at the sight of his princess snoring at the dinner table. Overindulged, Laura said with a grimace. Will you help me get her to her room? Anna was dead weight between the two of them as they half-dragged, half-carried her down the hallway and into her room, which was as lovely as Laura's own. If you hold her, Majesty, I'll check the sheets for snakes. Snakes? The thought distracted Laura enough that she nearly fell sideways under Anna's weight when the boy let go. He walked over to the bed and gave it a solid kick before flipping down the bedding, which was thankfully devoid of serpents. Easing Anna onto the bed, Laura dodged a near kick to the face as the taller woman rolled onto her stomach with a muffled grumble. Jerking off her boot, which had a wicked sharp blade concealed within it, Laura tossed it next to the bed, followed by the other, then dusted off her hands. Thank you for your assistance, she said to the boy, exiting the room and waiting for him to follow. What's your name?
It's Eli, my lady. I should say, this isn't normal for Her Highness.
He bit at his lower lip.
Perhaps I should let His Grace...
Let it be. Laura closed the door. No need to embarrass her further. The servant looked ready to argue, then Anna let out a loud snore, audible through the thick door, and seemed to think better of it.
Do you require anything else this evening, Your Grace?
Laura shook her head, wanting him gone.
Good night, Eli.
Bowing, he said,
Very good. Please check your bed for...
Snakes? She gave him a smile that turned his cheeks pink against the soft brown curls of his chaotic hair. He bowed again before fleeing down the hallway. Laura listened for the clatter of dishes being removed from the dining room, then silently let herself back into Anna's room, flipping the latch shut behind her. The princess did not so much as twitch, as Laura methodically searched for any information of use. Sighing covetously at the woman's arsenal of weapons, which were all of the finest make. But else of interest, there was nothing beyond a few keepsakes. A jewelry box with a few worthless items, and a music box with a false bottom filled with poetry. A childhood bedroom now seldom used. Turning down the lamp, Laura eased open the door to ensure the hall was empty before striding to her own room. There had been noise of activity at both ends of the hallway, no chance of her making it to the other side of the house without one of the servants noticing. Chewing on her thumbnail, Laura eyed the clock. The narcotic wasn't intended to last long, and the king hadn't indulged in wine to the extent his sister had, which meant she was running short of time. Slipping off her dress, Laura retrieved some toweling along with soaps and scrubs, and, lamp in hand, she stepped out into the courtyard. The night air was cool, a light mist of rain dampening her shift as she walked barefoot down the stone path toward the hot spring. Setting her bathing supplies next to the pool, Laura slid off her shift and slipped into the steaming water, taking one of her knives in with her. Then she turned down the lamp to a bare glow and allowed her eyes to adjust to the darkness. The noise of the jungle managed to be both deafening and soothing, a ceaseless cacophony that settled the rapid patter of her heart as she rested her elbows on the edge of the pool, perusing her surroundings. The chitter of birds merged with the rustle of leaves. The sharp shrieks of monkeys called back and forth through the trees. A creature, perhaps a frog of sorts, made a repetitive rattling noise. Insects droned, and mixed with it all was the gurgle of the waterfall behind her. Watch, listen, feel. The latter had always served her best,
Master Eric had called it the sixth sense, the unconscious part of the mind that took what all the other senses provided, then added something more. An intuition that could be tuned and honed into the most valuable sense of all. So whether she heard a sound or saw emotion, Laura could not have said. But her attention snapped from the roofline to the opening under the house through which the stream flowed. Guard. Sure enough, as she stared into the darkness, her eyes eventually picked out the shape of a foot resting against a rock. A flash of irritation that they'd dare to watch her while she bathed was erased by the obvious necessity. Auron was the king of Ithacana, and she was the daughter of an enemy kingdom. Of course, any avenue between them would be guarded. After ensuring there were no other guards, she marked the sight lines, searched for places that would give her cover. She glanced at her bright white shift resting in clear sight and eased into the stream that drained the pool, crawling on her elbows to keep her body beneath the bank. Warm water caressed her naked body as she crept down to the decorative bridge, which she used as cover to ease out, moving silently behind a bush with wide leaves. From there, she made quick work of crossing the courtyard, coming up beneath the king's window, which was slightly ajar. Adjusting a frond to cover her arm, she stretched upward and pulled the window open wider. Breathe. Reaching up with both arms, she heaved herself through the small gap, the frame scraping over her naked ass as she flipped, landing silently on her feet inside the dimly lit room, knife blade clenched between her teeth. She was met by Auron's cursed, enormous cat, staring at her with golden eyes. Laura held her breath, but the animal only leapt onto the windowsill and slipped out into the courtyard beyond. Her gaze went immediately to the man sprawled across the large, canopied bed. Auron lay on his back, wearing only a pair of undershorts, the sheets tangled around his lower legs. Knife gripped in her hand, Laura stepped carefully toward the bed, using one of the rugs to clean her feet. No need to leave her tiny footprints. There'd been no doubt in her mind after seeing him naked earlier that he was an impressive specimen of a man, but this time she had no fear of being caught staring. Twice her breadth in the shoulders, he was muscled in the way of an individual who pushed his body to the limits on a regular basis. Combat, judging from the scars, but his leanness spoke of an active life, not a man who sat back and ruled from a throne. Circling the bed, she examined his face, high cheekbones, strong jaw, full lips, and black lashes that a harem wife would die for. Scruff marked the line of his chiseled jaw, and she had to curb the urge to reach out and run her finger along it.
Maradrina will starve before they ever see the benefit of this treaty.
His words echoed through her mind, and of its own volition, Laura's hand snaked up, resting the edge of her blade against the steady pulse of his throat. It would be easy. One slice, and he'd bleed out in a matter of moments. He might not even wake long enough to sound the alarm. She'd be gone by the time they even realized he was dead. And she would have accomplished nothing besides destroying the only chance Maradrina had for a better future. Laura lowered her knife and made her way to the desk. Her heart skipped as she took in a polished wooden box of heavy parchment, embossed with Ithacana's bridge, edges gleaming with gilt. The very same stationery Saren had showed her that Auron used for official correspondence, and she immediately began to search for anything written on it that was directed to Maradrina. All she found were stacks of short notes on cheap paper, and she flipped through, taking in the reports from spies from every kingdom north and south. More reports from North and South Watch Islands, revenues, requirements for arms and soldiers and supplies. Provisions for Arinol. Frowning, she eased the sheet of paper out from under a stack, when the bed creaked behind her. Twisting, her stomach plummeted as her gaze locked with Auron's. He was propped up on one arm, shoulder muscles straining against the sleek golden brown of his skin.
Laura.
His voice was rough, eyes blurry from narcotics, sleep, and lust. His gaze roved over her naked body. Then he rubbed at his eyes as though not quite certain whether she was real or an apparition.
Do something.
Her training, drilled into her by her masters, finally kicked in. Either she followed through with what her standing there naked promised, or she found a way to get him back to sleep. The former was the safer strategy, but that wasn't a card she was yet willing to play.
How did you get in here?
His gaze was sharpening. If she didn't act soon, he'd remember seeing her when he woke, and that was not part of her plan.
Believe that you are something to be desired, and he will believe it too.
The voice of Mizat, the sister's mistress of the bedroom, said, invading Laura's thoughts.
Desire is your weapon to wield as wickedly as any sword.
That had seemed so simple back on the compound, much less so now. But she had no other choice. Slipping the vial from her bracelet, Laura covered her finger with the drug before lifting it to her mouth to coat her lips.
Shh, Your Grace. Now is not the time for conversation.
A shame. You have such a pleasant way with words.
I have other talents.
A slow smirk rose to his face.
Prove it.
A droplet of the narcotic beaded on Laura's bottom lip as she strolled with false confidence toward the bed, feeling Arin drink her in, watching his arousal take hold. Perhaps there was something to Mizat's teaching after all. Climbing onto the bed, she straddled him, her pulse roaring in her ears as he reached up one hand to cup her ass. His lips parted as though he'd say something, but she silenced him with a kiss. The first kiss of her life,
and she was giving it to her enemy.
The thought danced away as he groaned into her, his tongue chasing over her drug-laced lips, then delving deeper into her mouth, the sensation opening an unexpected floodgate of heat between her legs. She silently willed the drugs to work as she kissed him again, hard and demanding, feeling his other hand graze the bottom of her breast until she caught hold of it and pinned it to the mattress. He chuckled softly, but she marked the way his eyelids fluttered, barely conscious, even as his other hand trailed down her bottom, down the back of her leg and then up the inside of her thigh, up and down. Laura felt the drug starting to take effect on her, even as she felt something else building in her core. He rolled, catching her other hand and pinning them both to the mattress, his teeth nipping at her earlobe and pulling a gasp from her lips. The room spun above her even as her skin burned hot, his lips kissing her throat, between her breasts, a singular kiss just below her navel, turning her breathing to ragged gasps. Then Arin sighed once, slumped, and went still. Laura stared unblinking at the ceiling, her heart in her throat. But every beat seemed to grow more sluggish, sleep tugging at her, welcoming her into its warm embrace.
Move,
she ordered herself, worming her way out from under his weight. Knowing she had only a matter of minutes before the drug knocked her out, Laura stumbled toward the window, giving the room only a passing glance to ensure it was as she had found it. Her arms shuddered as she eased outside. Numb feet finding the cold ground, mud oozing between her fingers as she backtracked through the courtyard. In the stream, the water dancing over skin that, despite the narcotic, felt so sensitive that the touch hurt. The water was warm, strangely soothing as it pulled her under, welcoming her into its depths. Soon, she was choking, gasping, fighting to keep conscious as she reached for the edge and dragged herself out of the pool. Her body swayed as she pulled the shift over her head. She stumbled up the path, praying the guard would only think her drunk. Her hands hit the solid wood of the door, pushing it in, shutting it, turning the bolt.
Get to the bed. Don't give them a reason to suspect. Get to the bed. Get to the...
Arin put away the whetstone he'd been running across the blade of a knife, staring off into the depths of the jungle surrounding his home. Though 100 sounds emanated from the trees, the trickle of water, the calls of animals, the hum of insects, the island felt quiet, serene, peaceful. A warm, furry body rubbed against his arm, and Arin reached up to rub Vidix's ears, the big cat purring contentedly, until something in the bushes caught his attention. There'd been a female running about, and even now, Arin spotted her yellow eyes watching him from beneath a large leaf. "Want to go get her?" he asked his cat. Vidix only sat on his haunches and yawned. "Good plan. Let her come to you. Let me know how that works out for you."